Monster Crush is a horny, lighthearted dating show by and for people who love monsters a lot. All monsters are presumed to be of age and are presumed to have given enthusiastic consent in our fictional fuckery. Take care of yourself when listening and see our episode description for all content warnings. Welcome to Monster Crush, a podcast that's a little spooky, always sexy, and surprisingly educational. Every episode we dare to find love in all the wrong places on our never-ending quest for the best monster smooches. I'm joined once again by the very lovely, I called her a matron of madness before, why not stick with that for part two?
Sure.
LD, are you ready for In the March of Madness, part two?
It's so ready, despite the fact that it's not March anymore, let's go.
That doesn't matter. I got the theme music blaring already. Theme music.
Madness!
Welcome back. Welcome back to In the March of Madness Part 2. It doesn't matter that it's April. It doesn't matter that it's April Fool's Day. There's no tricks here. We're going to jump back into In the March of Madness. I discovered our Salty 17 single elimination bracket of Lovecraftian monsters. Last time we did the Eastern Conference, just ambivalently been the Eastern Conference this episode. We're going to do the Western Conference and narrow down to see who faces off against in the final round against Daggy Dagon. LD, how are you feeling going into the Western Conference here?
You know, I'm feeling pretty great. I feel really solid in my choice of who wins the Eastern Conference. You know, I feel like the Western Conference has some tough competition. I'll be both intrigued and delighted to see who shows up. And, you know, I'll be curious to see if there's any upsets in this round, in this side of the conference. There might be. You never know.
Yeah, I'm glad you feel solid because most of our singles today are really, really goopy.
Oh, good. My favorite.
So to do a little recap, in the Eastern Conference for last episode, we had Daggy Dagon going up against the flaccid volcano Mahar. Dagon winning out that round.
Easily.
Azathoth, the blind, unknowing god that created the universe by accident and could uncreate it with a fart and a sneeze, went up against Gloon, a flappy snail that had a thing for Dionysus. Gloon really being an upset in that first round.
Look, if you saw the pictures of Gloon...
The internet's very horny for Gloon.
Apparently. And you know, I can't blame them because now that I've seen the pictures, I'm like, I get it.
Yeah.
I see that.
In the third round, we had Mommy Hydra going up against Afum Za. Mommy Hydra, very much like Daggy Dagon, winning out there, moving on to the second round. And in it's Afium Za. It's Afium Za. And in the last round, we had Yog-Sothoth against the Dunwich Horror, a father-son pairing with Cthulhu stepping in as the wild card, sleeping ever in Relay. Woke up for that one because, apparently there was a need. There was a need for Cthulhu to step in there. In the second round, I don't sports often, so
I don't sports. Forgive me for how I'm describing this.
In the second tier of the bracket, Daggy Dagon went up against Gloon. Dagon winning out to move on to the final round of the Eastern Conference, with Mommy Hydra going up against Cthulhu. Cthulhu winning out against Mommy Hydra.
That was a tough one. That hurt.
So ultimately, it was Dagon against Cthulhu for the final. Dagon winning out for the Eastern Conference. For the Western Conference, we are looking at the first matchup being Yig versus Shub-Niggurath. The second matchup being Haster versus Zavil Pakua. The third matchup, Gatana Nathoa, which I'm still not sure that I think I'm adding an extra syllable in there. I will do my damnedest to, like, it's, they're all made up. Gatana Nathoa against Bnu Thune. And then the final matchup being Ran Tigoth versus Nyarlathotep. And that'll be our Western Conference. We'll see who wins out between those two and who ends up going to the final against Daggy Dagon. Who ends up winning? Mm-hmm. It's going to be a tough one. Who ends up winning the salty 17 single elimination Lovecraftian cosmic horror bracket for in the March of Madness. Last episode, we talked a lot about Lovecraft and you know, being the progenitor of the Cthulhu mythos all and how much of a piece of shit he is. We don't really need to go into that, but it does need to be said again that Lovecraft is remains in death an the absolute fucking piece worst. Of shit. Cosmic horror is just absolutely the worst. Cosmic horror is super cool. I guess he made some kind of okay monsters. The better authors have done better things with them since. So shout out to all of them. Before we get into In the March of Madness, I actually, to take a brief commercial break here, although that's not how the news works, but I do have some spooky news.
Spooky news.
Ooh. Spooky news. So there's actually, I have two news stories. Oh. Real quick, we'll get back to our regularly scheduled program here very quickly. But I have a news story that we've been sitting on for a little while, and it needs to be said. Like, if anybody needs to say it, we're the ones that need to say it. Mm-hmm. Mothman has a tramp stamp.
What?
The Mothman statue in Point Pleasant, West Virginia for about a month now. Actually, I think almost a month to the day. Uh-huh. We apologize for our negligence on reporting
this. We're so delayed on this. What is happening?
Has a tribal tramp stamp.
A tribal tramp stamp?
It is a tribal tramp stamp.
Okay.
As far as I can tell, the story kind of came about online. I don't think anybody's necessarily taking credit for being the person who tramp stamped Mothman.
Right.
As we've talked about before in our Mothman episode, there is a rather caked up statue, metal statue of the Mothman in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. It has just like, it has these like really big abs on it. It's got these like wormy chest hair. It's very scary looking. It's made of, I think, like aluminum or something like
scary,
that.
Scary, sure.
But it's got, it's got that's a fucking ass on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah.
It sure does.
So let me send
shiny metal ass.
Yes, it's chrome clappable cryptid cakes is often how I describe it.
Yes.
I'm going to post it here in our photo evidence. So you can see that, yes, it's very simple. It's very elegant. Moth-like in its design itself, which perhaps there's a bit of irony there. But just atop the crest of Mothman's cleaving ass.
Look,
there is like right above where, like, the tailbone. Right on the tailbone. Just a tribal design tattoo that has been placed on that statue. So yeah, like I said, I did my internet research to try to track down when that happened, and the earliest I could find was like late February, early March, like maybe the 28th.
Sure.
There was some stuff going on about it, but like it really gained traction as of like March 1st.
It's a well-placed tattoo. I will give it that. Yeah. I have feelings about it's definitely like tribal in the like tattoo style of tribal versus like being anything significant. Like culturally appropriative or whatever.
Oh yeah. It's like the late 90s, early 2000s.
Very much
white
so.
Guy tribal. Yeah. It's yeah.
It is reflected really beautifully above the sort of butt cleavage. It mirrors it very nicely. That ass is distracting on you Mothman. So? Yes. Do you not?
I mean, the one thing you say is, you can see yourself in it.
Yep. Sure. Uh-huh.
Literal buns of steel.
Buns of steel. Superman would be jealous.
He might, yeah. Well, you can see the weld marks on the wings right around the photo as well. I mean, it's just, yeah.
It's a...
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that's pretty much the news of
you.
I don't know how
stamp.
Long it's going to be there.
Yeah.
Mothman has a tramp stamp. I don't know if it's... I mean, it looks like a... St- sticker, but I can't.
It could be a sticker, or like one of those vinyl press-on thing. Like,
yeah, you know, that's what I'm thinking, because it doesn't look like it can be easily peeled off or removed. And I'm not sure anybody's like looking to spend state funds on removing it, because I'm sure it's getting tourism right now. So
enough rubbing alcohol, you can get anything off.
Yeah, maybe rubbing alcohol. I don't know. We'll see. I am, you know, I plan to do a trip back again. Uh-huh. I would love to do a trip to all of the big cryptid sites in the U.S. And maybe, you know, I'll get back out that way at some point. I've been to Mothman Museum a couple of times now, but
I've never been. I would like to see it. I hope that tattoo stays. Actually, it does. It's I feel like it adds to the piece. Really,
absolutely. Second bit of news I have today actually comes from our neck of the woods, more or less. Ooh, it's the state of Washington.
Sure.
So there was a Bigfoot sighting down in the website. Actually, I'm getting this from is from Runner's World, runnersworld.com, which is a website for people who do, you know, cross country and just running as a hobby, running as a sport.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, and it says ground mound. I think that's a typo, because I typed that into Google Maps and it gave me Grand Mound, Washington.
Very likely.
Which is a little bit south. It's actually a decent way south of Olympia.
Okay.
On whatever highway that is.
I mean, that's not in someone's neck of the woods.
Yeah, State Route 5. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, this says that recently Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, BFRO, as we have discussed before.
BFRO. This is the first time I'm hearing of BFRO, but okay. This is
We talked about BFRO back on the Bigfoot episode a little bit before you were lovely enough to join us. BFRO, one of my favorite things about them is their logo has toes, because it's supposed to look like a Bigfoot, like footprint.
Sure.
So their toes right next to the BFRO. And they do pronounce it BFRO. So BFRO was investigating a sighting of Bigfoot, of Sasquatch, near Grand Mound in Washington State. The sighting was by a group of motorcyclists who were passing through South Thurston County and spotted the figure of Sasquatch running on a ridge about a half mile ahead of them. According to the report that they gave BFRO, they said it was a very large and human-shaped creature. It was one color, tan/brown, and was moving across very rugged terrain, making a beeline for the tree line. That's a fun little rhyme.
Beeline for the tree line.
Beeline for the tree line. The group watched the figure run for about 30 seconds before it left their vision. It moved, this is the quote they gave, it moved so fluently with little arm movement, unlike a human running, the motorcyclist said. It was easily 10 feet tall for us to be able to see it from so far away.
Interesting. Of course it's 10 feet tall.
They always are.
Always.
It's always 10 feet. So the reason I didn't give you the headline to this particular news article, because it would give away the prestige of this particular story. It was not a Bigfoot. This was not a Sasquatch. This was not a cryptid of any kind. This was a high school student from Ross Rochester High School named Gunnar Morgan, who is a cross country runner, and I identified himself as being the quote Sasquatch. He was literally just out for a run. He recognized, I guess he pays attention. The story was reported in the Chronicle and shared thousands of times via social media.
Mm-hmm.
So after the paper had kind of reported that there was a Bigfoot sighting, it received an email from Gunner who said that the Sasquatch was me. He said he is not 10 feet tall, but his cousin and he are adept cross-country runners and live in the area and run often in that exact wilderness area. The reason we appeared larger than usual was because we were running side by side and we run extremely fluidly compared to most people. So he literally showed his GPS watch from his Garmin GPS watch, which showed that he and his cousin were running at that same point at that same time.
Oh, wow.
That the sighting occurred. So,
well,
yes, that's... know for a fact, he's 6'1".
That's pretty tall. I mean,
it's not 10 feet.
No.
I guess maybe if you think that like you're looking over a ridge, you should only be able to see so much of a person. I mean, that just shows we as humans, we can't trust our eyesight
that
well.
Sure,
we think we know where things are and how big things are. And, you know, you really need a point of reference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's one of the big issues that I have with people who report like thunderbirds or giant things in the sky is you really don't often have a point of reference in the sky for how big something is.
Because we don't have anything to compare it to.
Right. Yeah. Often things on the ground are reported, like if people are scared of them, they report them being 10 feet tall, because mm-hmm. 10 feet is the breaking line for something being scary to us.
Yes.
Because if you think like a grizzly bears don't even stand 10 feet tall.
No.
But 10 feet's a giant.
Yes.
But if something's in the sky, it's often 30 feet. Mm-hmm. 30 feet is scary to us in the sky.
Interesting.
That's like if a bird or a bat or anything like that. Yeah. A lot of times when you see like Thunderbird stories or giant bat stories, it's 30 feet. So, Gunnar Morgan said, I can pinpoint exactly where the motorcyclist must have spotted us, where we must have been. I stand 6 feet, 1 inch. And from a distance, we could have been mistaken for a larger creature. Mm-hmm. While Washington State tops the nation in what the BFRO deems, quote, credible Bigfoot sightings, with 708 sightings so far. Yeah, I'm not sure if that has to be overall, not annual.
Right.
Morgan himself says he has never seen the mythical creature while running in the area, but loves the attention it has brought. He says he thinks the story is very funny.
Well, I am glad that he's a good sport about it. I am a little bummed that it was dispelled quite so quickly.
Yeah.
Although if you hadn't said that it was like some kid running, I probably would have like, did this article come out like what, today? Because nothing can be trusted today.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's the big thing about today is...
Wednesday and everything.
Yeah, got to be careful about April Fool's. Weirdly enough, when I do type in, like, you know, cryptid, monster, and paranormal, and especially on days like today, I typically have to be very careful, but not a lot came out today. Not a lot was being pushed today, weirdly enough.
People were not in the spirit. I saw very little in the way of April Fool's Day pranks in general myself. There's a few here and there, but... I feel like it was half-hearted at best.
A little sprinkling.
Yeah.
I should also note, because it did come up in searches, if you or someone out there like me who also does, like, you know, search for cryptid and look for news and stuff, we're not going to touch on the story at all because this is real-life sad stuff, and we typically talk about, if we talk about sad stuff, it has the tragedy plus time equals comedy kind of thing.
Correct.
But with the recent bridge collapse in Baltimore... there are some people who are pointing to Mothman for that.
Naturally.
There is absolutely nothing to indicate that there were any Mothman sightings before, during, or after the bridge collapse. It is a real tragedy. It could have been a lot worse, but it still is incredibly bad. And conspiracy theories don't help in a scenario like this, which is very clear what happened. Mm-hmm. So, don't be shitty. Don't point to cryptids when there's real human tragedy.
Correct.
Anyway. Okay, let's jump back into to the point of today. Let's return to In the March of Madness. Madness! Anyway, okay. For the beginning of our Western Conference, again, they were on the right side of my paper, and I decided that was West because West is on the right, because even though it's on the left, but it comes second because it's north, south, east. Anyway, broken brain. Yeah.
Yep.
I had to explain. We're starting out with Yig versus Shub-Niggurath. Yig might not sound super familiar, but I guarantee that you are maybe a little more familiar than you might think, as Yig is actually deeply connected to another famous author and another famous property. Mm. Are you familiar with Conan the Barbarian?
To a certain degree, yeah. I mean, most of my familiarity comes from... loving the Red Sonja comics.
Oh, sure.
Which is connected to Conan the Barbarian. And I know that there was, like, I know that there's a lot of media around Conan the Barbarian. Mm-hmm. And I am, like, I'm aware of its existence, if not a, like, consumer of said media.
Yeah, so Conan the Barbarian, originally created by author Robert E. Howard, is mostly about a, like, sword and sandal Sumerian barbarian who slays his way across a fantasy realm that's also supposed to be, like, somewhat tied into the real world, but, like, the fantastical real world. Robert E. Howard was actually very good friends with H.P. Lovecraft. They were pen pals.
Oh, fascinating.
And so...
Is he a shithead, too?
He, not as much, weirdly enough.
Okay.
He did have a kind of tragic end to his life. He did end his own life. Very young, if I remember right. So, let's see. He had suffered tuberculosis for decades. His mother was nearing her end. Constant interruptions of care workers at home combined with frequent trips to various sanatoriums for her care made it nearly impossible to write. Whenever his mother's health declined, he made veiled allusions to his father about planning suicide, which his father didn't understand at the time. He made references when speaking to one of his friends about being in his seer in yellow leaf. And that is actually from Macbeth, where the quote is, "I have lived long enough. My way of life is fallen into the seer, the yellow leaf, and that which should accompany old age as honor, love, obedience, troops of friends. I must not look to have, but in their stead, curses, not loud but deep, mouth, honor, breath, which the poor heart would fain deny and dare not." So he ended up using a 380 Colt automatic that he had borrowed from a friend. And ended his own life. So it's kind of a tragic thing where he did contribute so much. He wrote, he was a prolific author. You know, a lot of Conan stuff appeared in like the Weird Tales pulp magazines and there's that legacy to it. But he was 30 when he ended his life in Texas. But yeah, I don't believe that he and Lovecraft
quite a legacy to leave behind though.
Absolutely. And it's kind of, well, kind of the same with Lovecraft as well, who also died relatively young. He was considered a member of the Lovecraft Circle, which was a group of writers and friends all linked via the immense correspondence of H.P. Lovecraft, who wrote over 100,000 letters in his lifetime. Made a point to introduce many of his like-minded friends to one another, encourage them to share stories. So that's kind of the thing we were talking about, is Lovecraft kind of forced his way into the pulp scene by criticism, and then ended up garnering kind of a circle around him.
Sure.
But we talk about Robert E. Howard, a lot of the villains in the Conan the Barbarian stories were based on cults of chthonic deities, but back in like ancient times, because they would have still existed.
Right.
So even when you look at the Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, where you have James Earl Jones turning into a snake person, he is part of the cult of Yig, which was a serpent deity. So it's kind of veiled chthonic stuff where he's fighting giant tentacle monsters and stuff like that, because they would also be, you know, long lasting. Yeah, they would still exist. They'd still have cults. They'd still be trying to drive people to madness. And Conan would have his whole deal trying to fight against them.
Oh,
so
fun.
Yeah. So that's the other cool thing about like the chthonic mythos, is it doesn't have to be in the 1920s where Lovecraft was writing the majority of his stuff. You know, when we talk about the pulp of Cthulhu, it often does take place in that Depression, Gilded Age kind of era, the Jazz Age, or the you know, but it can take place in the Old West. It can take place in medieval era. It can take place in, you know, the Sumerian fantasy sword and sandal times.
Correct.
So anyway, when we talk about, you know, the Yig specifically, to go back to our Singleton, he is a big old snaky boy. He is a giant snake with the arms of a man, which I think disqualifies him as being a snake.
I was going to say, are they really a snake if they have arms?
That's just a reptile.
Yeah.
So he is considered to be a god of snakes and serpents.
Okay.
Much as like a lot of the chthonic creatures are considered gods in their own right.
Sure.
They are godlike.
Yeah.
He feels a fierce devotion to his, quote, children, emerging from his sleep every autumn to punish those who harm them.
Oh.
So St. Patrick, I guess, is fucked.
Yeah.
He does this either by turning the enemies into serpents, or serpent-like wretches themselves, or simply sends other snakes to kill them when they sleep.
Oh.
Yeah. In times long past, Yig and his then-mate, Coatacu, ruled the crimson cavern of Yoth beneath the subterranean land of Kinnan-Yan, where the two were worshipped as gods by the denizens of Yoth, the Serpentmen.
Mm-hmm.
This arrangement came to an end when the Serpentmen transferred their veneration to... fuck you, Howard. Sathagoua? Sure.
Okay.
And Mighty Yig placed his curse upon them.
Sure.
One story of Yig tells of a couple from Arkansas in the 1800s who were moving to Oklahoma in search of a better life. On their journey, the woman came across a nest of newborn rattlesnakes. Knowing the fear her husband had for snakes, she killed them with the butt of her rifle to spare him the sight. But later that fall, having built themselves a cabin, carved out an existence for themselves, Yig came for the woman and her family in the night, sending a swarm of serpent men to kill them.
Right.
Yig then tricked the woman into killing her husband with an axe. Jesus. Having her believing that it was actually Yig coming to take his vengeance. Finally, the snake god transformed her into a part human, part reptile monstrosity, and cursed her for all of eternity.
Cool.
So, don't fuck with snakes.
I don't generally anyway, except that I do appreciate them as creatures. I think snakes are cool.
So Yig is also thought in the fiction to be the deity responsible for the legends of Kukulkan and Quetzalcoatl worshipped by the native peoples of Central and South America.
Because
snakes.
Because, sure.
Yig is going up against Shub-Niggurath. Shub-Niggurath, often associated with the phrase, the black goat of the woods with 1,000 young, is another deity of the Cthulhu mythos.
Sure is.
Also referred to as the black ram of the forest with 1,000 ewes, which is, I guess, synonymous.
Yeah.
But this lends a male gender to the deity that is often thought of as female.
True.
So, a little back and forth on this one. Yeah. A little gender fluidity to Shub-Niggurath. Mm-hmm. And I did post pictures for you so you can compare and contrast.
Mm-hmm.
Shub-Niggurath is first mentioned in Lovecraft's revision story, The Last Test, in 1928. She is never actually described, as Lovecraft often did not describe the more eldritch beings, but would give like generalizations or just like kind of like brief adjectives or like very visceral adjectives. Endless sometimes, which I mean, you can't literally think of what is endless. Our minds cannot conceive of what is endless. But she is frequently mentioned or called upon in incantations throughout the lore of Lovecraft. Most of her development as a literary figure was carried out by other mythos authors. As we kind of mentioned, a lot of other authors took Lovecraft stuff and really made it something else, made it better. One author, August Derleth, classified Shub-Niggurath as a great old one, but the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game classifies her as an outer god, there actually being a difference between the two. Great old ones are more connected to the earth, where outer gods actually exist further in space. Being a resident on earth would be a great old one because he influenced the planet and its its people, but like Azathoth would be an outer god.
Right, yes.
Shub-Niggurath is a perverse fertility deity, said to appear as an enormous cloudy mass which extrudes black tentacles, slime-dripping mouths, and short, writhing goat legs. Small creatures are spat forth, which are either reconsumed into the miasmic form or escape to some monstrous life somewhere else. So, I don't think that spells fertility to me.
No! But
somebody does.
I mean, you know, the definition of eat your young, I guess.
Yeah, I don't even know. It's just like, you just spit up a mutated goat and you're like, nom, 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 nom.
So I will admit, I think I've talked about this game before. There's a visual novel series called Sucker for Love, which I adore. Mm. That has, in the first three, has chthonic creatures as your love interests, the king in yellow being one of them, Niala,
of course.
Yeah, there's a couple of other folks on there that would be really familiar. The sequel to it, which has not come out yet, but I do love, and has a version of the black goat of the wood of Shub-Niggurath, although I think she goes by a different name. And I have to say, I am disappointed to see this particular art, because the art for the one in the Sucker for Love game is really good. It's really great.
Okay, Sucker for Love.
And I can't remember what the... they also don't call her Shub-Niggurath, but they do call her the Black Goat of the Wood. Yeah.
Sure do.
Uh-huh.
No, that has heavy, I'm not a furry butt energy.
It
says goat mommy is here, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, yeah. I could explain, but I'm not going to.
No. Well.
You know, so in my head, when I think of that, because I love Sucker for Love, like, I see this image of Shub-Niggurath that you have given me, which is probably much more in line with chthonic. I mean, it looks like a chthonic monster. But in my head, I see Goat Mommy, which makes things challenging.
Goat Mommy is much, much more Baphomet-esque. I mean, that is...
Well, yes.
Like, the shiny anime titties are not appearing on the writhing mass of tentacle mouths that just slurp out abominations and then slurp them back up.
I will say, those are not titties that are on that artwork.
Okay. If we're going to sit here and talk about what is and is not a titty, I don't know. Maybe. Yeah.
They could
maybe be. Maybe they're cysts. Maybe they're bulbous just sacks. Maybe they're titties.
Maybe it's both. I'm not... Like, you know, it's a writhing mass of who knows what.
Yeah, sexy.
Hot.
Yeah, I'm not here to king shame, you know, you do you. As we are, you know, once again in the March of Madness, this is not a competition between who would win in a fight or who's cooler or who's whatever going to be the top tier. This is who you want to smooch more. So
yeah.
We are looking at a snake with arms versus a miasmic mass of tentacles, mouths that sometimes vomit up.
And bulbous hanging things. Who knows?
Bulbous hanging things. Yeah.
This was a tough one, again, because all I can see in my head is Goat Mommy. However, I have to hand it to Yig on this one. Yig is just, I feel like Yig is more approachable as a deity. And like, really, you just have to not piss off snakes, frankly. And I think that's great because that's really easy. Have you seen hognose snakes?
They're very cute.
And they're so dramatic, especially when they pretend that they're dead. It's very funny.
Flip over. Yeah.
And they're like, I'm dead. Like, I love snakes. They have like one brain cell, and we know I love a himbo. So I think it's got to go with Yig on this one. Sorry, Goat.
Yeah, I'm still looking at the thigh highs on Shub-Niggurath. So, going to close that page.
You're welcome.
And we're moving on now. So, with Yig, moving on to round two, we move on to the second competition here with Haster, the King in Yellow, versus Sylvil Bakua.
Yeah.
So, we have Haster, the King in Yellow, fictional cosmic deity that first appeared not in a Cthulhu writing, but in Ambrose Bierce's short story, Haita the Shepherd, in 1893. That is Ambrose Bierce, I should say, B-I-E-R-C-E.
Sure.
And was later expanded on by Robert W. Chambers, H.P. Lovecraft, and August Derleth.
Okay.
Who was mentioned in Yiggs as well. August Derleth, that is. Haster debuted in Ambrose Bierce's short story, the Haita, the Shepherd, that is H-A-I with an umlaut T-A, Haita? I think if we're going German, it's going to be the second vowel that we pronounce.
My German's terrible, so.
So it would be Haita, the Shepherd. I might be wrong on that. And which he was presented as benevolent god of shepherds in Chambers, the King in Yellow. Which appeared in 1895, a collection of some of which it was just a collection of a bunch of horror stories. The word Haster is used to describe several concepts such as a character in place. But finally, in Lovecraft's The Whisper in Darkness in 1931, Haster is mentioned alongside many other deities and locations of the Cthulhu mythos. So Haster is kind of an amorphous, nigh unknowable sort of creature.
Sure. A man of mystery.
Haster is otherwise known as the Unspeakable One, him who is not to be named, Asator, Zashtor, Haaztra, and Kaiwan. Like that last one kind of, I'm really, why do I do this to myself? In Bierce's work, the original work, Haster is more benevolent, as we said, kind of a shepherd of shepherds. In Chambers, the King Yellow, the horror story collection, he is named as a potentially supernatural character and potentially a place. But in Cthulhu's work, because he read Chambers' book in 1927 mm-hmm. and was enchanted by it, that he decided to co-opt a lot of it. This is a quote. "I found myself faced by names and terms that I had heard elsewhere in the most hideous of connections. Yugoth, Great Cthulhu, Sathokua, Yog-Sothoth, Relay, Nyarlathotep, Azathoth, Haster, Yan, Lang, the Lake of Hali, mm-hmm. Bethmora, the Yellow Sign, Lemur Catholos, Bran, and Magnum, Enomendandum, and was drawn back through nameless eons and inconceivable dimensions to worlds of Elder. Elder deity at which the crazed author of the Necronomicon had only guessed in the vaguest way." And this is what he wrote in The Whisper in Darkness. So, it is unclear from this quote if Haster is a person, place, or object. Mm-hmm. Because, again, the yellow sign is mentioned, or even a deity. But in the same story, it's later mentioned that Migo have been attacked by followers of Haster. Migo are other creatures mm-hmm. In Cthulhu mythos yeah. that are these like fungus-based life forms. And that Haster is an enemy of the Outer Ones whom the Migo serve. So again, in The Whisper of Darkness, it says, "Actually, they have never knowingly harmed men, but have often been cruelly wronged and spied upon by our species. There's a whole secret cult of evil men. A man of your mystical erudition will understand me when I link them with Haster and the Yellow Sign, devoted to the purpose of tracking them down and injuring them on behalf of monstrous powers from other dimensions. It is against these aggressors, not against normal humanity, that the drastic precautions of the Outer Ones are directed." So, again, we get Haster now as an entity, something that is powerful enough to strike out against the Old Ones. And other authors would build on that even more. So we sometimes get the King in Yellow as an amorphous but vast, vaguely octopoid being, mm-hmm. similar to, I guess, technically within the Cthulhu mythos, his half-niece Cthilla.
Oh, right. Yes, of course.
Yeah, because they're all fucking They're related. All related.
Yeah.
And it's also noted that Haster has a strange effect on artists and playwrights.
Oh, that's kind yeah. of like one of
his focuses, is that even the King in Yellow, I think in some of the mythos, has, like, there's a play surrounding uh-huh. the King in Yellow that yes. would drive you to madness should you act it out.
Yes.
He's appeared in, I mean, numerous other media. He's appeared in, he was in Good Omens mm-hmm. with Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett. He is in a number of video games and role-playing games and Doctor Who adventures mm-hmm. and Stephen King novels and everything else. But essentially what we kind of get ultimately is a yellow cloaked figure that hides something unknowable, tentacly and chthonic beneath its yellow cloak, and mm-hmm. is one of the most well-recognized but least known about. Besides, I think, like, Cthulhu's really well-known about. Cthulhu's yes. really well-recognizable. The King in Yellow, most people are like, oh, yeah, I've heard of the King in Yellow, but yeah. they don't really know a lot about mm-hmm. the King in Yellow. So, we have, again, Haster the King in Yellow against Zavil Pakua. So, Zavil Pakua, which, again, it's one word, so I think it's Zavil Pakua. Z-V-I-L-P-O-G-G-H-U-A. Why not?
Sure.
Also known as Asadagawa and the Star Beast, or the Feaster from the Stars.
It's a cool title. Great name.
It is a cool title. Mm-hmm. Zavil Pakua was mostly recognizable as a colossal bipedal toad, lacking in arms but possessing a pair of leathery wings. It was said to have a long neck and a face covered in thick, grasping tentacles.
The
occult volume of evil sorceries done in New England of demons in no human shape makes mention of Zavil Pakua. Known by another name by the Native Americans, that's the Asadagawa. Again, within the fiction.
Sure.
Zavil Pakua is capable of manifesting an avatar known as the Star Beast, which was occasionally summoned by native peoples. However, this was only done in times of direst need, as once summoned, the beast would only return to the heavens when it so chose, although it's unknown what form this avatar assumed. And overall, Zavil Pakua is believed to have been spawned on the planet Yaksh to the great sure. old ones Sathagua and Shathak. And he now resides on the planet Drowtram, which orbits the star Algol and the constellation of Perseus.
Mm-hmm.
And he's related to a whole bunch of others, but of no course. Others that have appeared on our bracket so far. So King in Yellow versus a big frog with bat wings.
When you say a big frog with bat wings, that makes it slightly more interesting. But I do love A Man of Mystery. And on top of that, somebody with an appreciation for the arts, obviously. I feel
a connection. Yeah. I don't know about appreciation.
Well, understanding the power of storytelling is truly.
Sure. That's a good way of putting it.
You know, there's something very sexy about that. I feel like it's really obviously the King in Yellow for this one. Like, I don't think it's a true contest. Also has the benefit of not having been originally created by H.P. Lovecraft, which I think ratchets up the points a few for in favor of the King in Yellow, for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of one of the cool things about, again, how we've talked about how these creations get passed around. But I think that really... It adds so much to them. It's kind of like the creepypasta before the internet, where the mythos it was built on by contributors. You know, it kind of has an SCP feel, but from actual professional authors and not just anybody with a fucking keyboard. All right,
look, we love SCP around here.
Oh, we sure do. It's great stuff. It's great. It's great stuff. But again, it is SCP benefits from crowdsourcing in the same way that like. We began with God of Shepherds and got a really fucking badass yellow cloaked eldritch deity of fear and theaters. All right, moving on to the third competition here. We have Gitanothoa up against Bgnuthun. Bgnuthun. Bgnuthun.
You're Bgnuthun.
I might be. I don't know. Let's find out. So, Gitanothoa, a great old one.
Yeah.
The firstborn of Cthulhu. This is Cthulhu's oldest kid. His first child.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the oldest kid. So what are some of the stereotypes for the firstborn?
It's different depending on your gender.
That's true.
Usually the highest expectations as a firstborn myself, hilariously. And yes, I'm a twin. And yes, it still matters. The expectations on you are real high because you're the heir apparent. And also you're the one responsible looking out for all of your other siblings. You know, there's a responsibility to being the firstborn, truly.
Sure. Okay. Well,
all of the responsibility, none of the credit.
Well, you and Gitanothoa can chat about that. Gitanothoa being...
Here's the thing is, firstborns usually don't get along well in that way. I'm just saying, it's a point...
Too much alpha energy.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, type A personalities, maybe a little bit.
So already sort of down a peg here, you know. It's gonna have to work real hard to win this spot already. I can tell you that much.
His mommy is Idinya, who appears as a colossal, pale, worm-like monstrosity that dwells beneath the surface of the planet. But the planet of a green binary Zoth star system. So not even our planet. No, but it looks like that pale worm and Cthulhu got it on and made this lovely gentleman. Sibling of Yathogtha, Zoth Omog, and Cthulhu. Gitanothoa is an enormous, amorphous god, as we've seen many times now, but whose appearance is so hideous that anyone who looks upon it, or even the image of it, will be instantly immobilized and turned into what amounts to a living mummy. Their skin assumes a leathery texture, and their internal organs are preserved for all time. Anybody unfortunate enough to fall victim to this fate will be completely paralyzed, yet still fully conscious and aware. Only the destruction of the brain will free this poor soul from its torment.
It's not looking great for this one, personally.
Are you sure?
Yeah, you know, because the whole, like, paralyzed but awake is sleep paralysis, and I hate it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, it's a leathery mummy. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's upsetting, really. So, I mean, you know, it depends. Maybe Bgnutha is worse.
Yeah, Bgnuthun. Yeah,
maybe. Bgnuthun.
Gitanothoa was brought to Earth after his. I'm going to say it because I haven't seen a haven't seen I've not seen a pronoun yet. Mm-hmm. So Gitanothoa was brought to Earth after their birth on the planet Zoth, by an ancient alien race, potentially the Migo, as we mentioned before, millennia ago, and then it was entombed beneath Mount Yadith-Go on the lost continent of Mu. You know, the lost continent of Mu. Which lies at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean in modern times. Mm-hmm. Since then, Gitanothoa has remained in bondage, worshipped first by the Loigor, and later by the humans, which resettled Mu. Over the eons, many have attempted to destroy Gitanothoa. Most noteworthy was an attempt in the Year of the Red Moon.
Sure.
When Tyog, the high priest of Shub-Niggurath, created a magical stroll to protect himself from the Dark God's petrifying appearance, this effort doomed him to a horrible fate when Gitanothoa's own priests secretly replaced the artifact with a fake. Oofa doofa.
Yeah.
See, it's tough when these old gods can't even get along with each other. So that's really it.
What gods do get along with each other, really? I mean, very few.
They fuck each other every now and then.
That's not the same thing, and you know it.
Yeah, I know. Jeez, that was really aggressive.
I know.
But you get that Holy Trinity. You at least had, like, Cthulhu, Dagon, and Mother Hydra. Those three at least get along.
Okay. Fair enough.
At least. But yeah, that's pretty much it for Gitanothoa. Just, if you look at them, you become a living mummy, unable to move.
Sure.
And they're in a sunken city. That's all you get.
Okay.
So, cool. Going up against, unfortunately, not a lot for Gnu Thune. This is one of those where I had mentioned, you know, some of them have a lot, some of them have almost nothing.
Mm-hmm.
This literally says almost nothing is known about Gnu Thune, although it is reported to appear as a gigantic humanoid monstrosity with blue tinged skin. Wherever it passes, a fierce otherworldly blizzard follows in its wake, earning Gnu Thune the epithet the soul chilling ice god.
Ooh.
I could not even really find a good image of this. There's kind of just like an image of the, like, set into a rock wall, weirdly enough. So I just looked up ice giant and considered that good enough.
Okay. Huh.
So yeah, that's,
God.
That's it. That's all I got. That's all I got. Yeah. So you either have blizzard giant, or the firstborn firstborn of Cthulhu,
right,
who you can't look at.
Right. I mean, I almost wish I had subbed in Cthulhu for these two.
I unfortunately do not have another wild card.
It's totally fine. It's, you know, we're just going to go with my gut here, and we're going to go with our soul-chilling friend, if for no other reason than at least is that, like, sleep paralysis is such a horrifying experience half the time that I would probably choose not to experience that if I can. And so, like, at least if you're really, really cold, you just sleep. Like, you know?
That's true.
If you're exposed to that.
Just a legit death. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's not this horrifying middle state. And, you know, ice giants have a certain appeal. You know, piercing gazes and all of that. You know, there's a romance thing. Some people are really into the icy thing. There's, you know, enough people have read Twilight that I know this to be true.
Sure. I thought you were going to mention Frozen, but yeah, no. Do you remember the Twilight Fleshlights?
No.
Yeah. There was a series of Twilight sex toys that came out, including some vampire fanged fleshlights that look like vampire mouths, and also for the ladies, some things you could pop into the freezer to get the genuine Edward Cullen effect.
Oh God! I mean, you know, everybody's got their kinks, and you know, more power to you. I got
everybody's got something.
Everybody's got more power to you if that's your thing. I'm gonna have to go with Bugoo.
All right. Bugoo. Moving forward with Gnu Thune, I was looking up to see if I could find if you were absolutely not in love with Gnu Thune, I do maybe have another wild card. Somebody else has stepped into the playing field onto the court. This is basketball. I do have another creature here called Gnof Keh, which is a 6-legged polar bear with a narwhal horn.
You seemed really enthused with that. Let's stick with Booba the Foo. I'm sorry.
Canoe Thune. Yeah, I don't know. Like this one. This with one Boo-Boo. Was one where I,
this is the thing. At least saw it. we have a nickname now. It's Boo Boo.
Yeah.
Like you Boo-Boo. Know, a cute little pet name. Boo Boo. We'll go with Boo Boo.
I think Nofka is an old one.
Uh huh.
Because it's a sibling with like it was. It is of a Fumza.
Okay.
So. Like it is, it's one of Afumza's kids,
mm-hmm.
and
because I was so thrilled with Afumza the first time.
Also true, but I think that makes it also a sibling with one of the other ones in here.
Look, maybe
Rantigoth. So we're going to be coming up with Rantigoth next. So
okay.
Yeah, I guess it's probably the best because Rantigoth could have gone up against a sibling then, and that's just yeah. Let's keep it out of the family as much as possible. So with Winnu Thune moving on to the second round,
we're gonna warm that frozen heart of his. Probably unlikely, but you know we can sure try.
Absolutely. Well, we have the last matchup of the first round here. I think our second and third will move a little bit faster here.
Sure.
Nyarlathotep, also known as the Crawling Chaos, is a deity in the Cthulhu mythos, first appearing in 1920 in a prose poem of the same name. It's later mentioned in other works of Lovecraft and also by other writers, as well as in all of the Lovecraft products, the role-playing games and everything else. So Nyarlathotep differs from the other beings in a number of ways. Most of them are exiled to the stars, like Yog-Sothoth and Hastur, or sleeping and dreaming like Cthulhu. Nyarlathotep, however, is active, frequently walks the earth in the guise of a human being, usually presenting as a tall, slim, joyous man. Most of the other old ones have a number of cults that serve them. Nyarlathotep seems to serve the other old gods and take care of their affairs in their absence.
Oh.
So not really cultivating cults of his own. He kind of is a little whisper man. Little
Nyarlathotep works then.
Nyarlathotep is there at their side as an advisor.
Amazing.
So most of the old ones use strange alien languages. Nyarlathotep uses human languages and can often be mistaken for a human being, especially in disguise. And finally, most of the old ones are powerful yet purposeless, but Nyarlathotep seems to be deliberately deceptive and manipulative, and even uses propaganda to achieve his goals. In this regard, he is probably the most human-like among the great old ones. So Nyarlathotep, I think we'd even mentioned before, like works for Azathoth, but also manipulates Azathoth to do certain things.
Sure.
And manipulates certain of the great old ones to do certain things, especially the ones that are disconnected from Earth, like Yog-Sothoth and Hastur. And we have Nyarlathotep going up against Rantigoth. Rantigoth is a 15-foot from head to toe, amphibious creature with a globular thorax, three eyes, and six limbs, the limbs each terminating into a claw, which resembles that of a crab. It is covered in what at first glance appears to be hair, but which is, in fact, a multitude of tiny tentacles. It's said to be a creature of little power.
Okay.
Little tentacle hairs. A creature of little power, although by the immense standards of the great old ones, this is most assuredly is a relative thing, as Rantigoth is still vastly more powerful than any human may imagine, even just being 15 feet. Originated on the planet Yugoth, Rantigoth spent its early years trawling the ocean depths of that cold world, traveling to Earth about 3 million years ago. For a while, it made an area of Alaska its home, where it was worshipped by the cannibalistic Nofke, which actually was the six-legged polar bear, horned polar bear people.
Sure.
Who descend from the singleton I'd mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
Before dropping into a millennia-long sleep. In the year 1926, Rantigoth's body was found by a man named George Rogers, a wax museum owner who specialized in grotesque and disturbing sculptures, who passed the being's body off as one of his exhibits. Rogers slowly began to lose his mind to the insidious influence of the Great Old One and started to make sacrifices to it. Rantigoth eventually killed Rogers and thereafter went missing for a time. Rantigoth was sighted in Sheffield, England in the 1980s and again in the United States in the 1990s, but its current whereabouts are unknown.
Sure.
This is the child of Afumza. Again, we mentioned Gnofke as its brother, and also has another brother named Vorm.
Vorm.
Yeah, V-O-O-R-M, Vorm.
Okay. All right. You know, I mean, both of them, in light of what we've heard from everybody else, neither of them seem that bad. But I will say, Nyarlathotep does sound like more fun. I love a shapeshifter. Somebody with a purpose also and who has goals is really like a, you know, attractive and worth sort of cultivating.
Bit of a gossip girl, you know, but goals.
It's definitely, I think it sounds like Nyarlathotep falls under that like seneschal, like advisor type character that like
Grima Wormtongue being the
Well, now that you've brought up Wormtongue, I'm not sure. But, like, it's a very it is a stereotype.
Brad Dourif is a handsome man. I don't know.
Yeah, it's true. So, I mean, but, you know, also a shapeshifter, the most human-like, really relatable, I feel.
It's true.
I mean, and this image is a little confusing, admittedly, that you have found of Nyarlathotep. I can't discern, like, a face or a head, but...
It's kind of in the tentacle a little bit. There's the mouth, which is kind of screaming a little bit.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah. But, you know, they look well built, nice arms, really. Some really truly excellent, like, thigh situation happening.
Some artwork treats the tentacle head like a hood. Yeah. And there's almost like a mouth kind of built into it or there's a head. But again, shapeshifter.
Shapeshifter. So, yeah. There's plenty to work with here. I think it's got to go to Nyarlathotep.
Nyarlathotep, moving forward.
I will say I did just say Nyarlathotep, and it's because, again, Sucker for Love has Nyarlathotep in it, and they are a cat.
That
you can also smooch. Actually, she's a little... Well, she in the game is a little... she's a lot, really.
I mean, to be fair, Nyarlathotep also sounds like a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to be looking up Sucker for Love artwork here.
Please do.
While we move on to the second round, which is going to be Yaeg versus Haster, the King in Yellow. So we have the granddaddy of all snakes and serpents versus the yellow-hooded, unknowable figure of cosmic horror.
I think this one's much tougher. I do love Yaeg, but it's got to go to the man. It's got to go to the King in Yellow. The royalty, again, I think the King in Yellow is frankly the whole package here.
I have to agree, but I'm sorry, you're not getting snakes for Christmas anymore. Or whatever Cthulhu Christmas is. All right, Haster, the King in Yellow. Moving on to the final two then.
Yep.
And we have then the ice giant thing, Gnu Thun Boo Boo. Going to go against Nyarlathotep.
Just because we know more about Nyarlathotep versus Boo Boo, I'm sorry. Boo Boo just doesn't, you got to give me something to work with.
Be unknowable and mysterious like Haster.
Yeah.
Not just like, I don't know, you make blizzards, whatever.
Whatever, right? I feel like I need a little bit more from Boo Boo. I think Nyarlathotep takes this fairly easily.
Nyarlathotep, moving on then to the final two of the Western Conference. Okay, well, Aldi, you've got two more decisions to make. I think some of the tougher decisions.
Where it gets really rough.
It does. In the final round of the Western Conference, we have Haster, the King in Yellow, up against Nyarlathotep, the Crawling Chaos, up against the Unspeakable One.
Okay, so I feel like I have to reason this out. Because up until this point, the King in Yellow has a lot going for him. A man of mystery, a man of the theater, which are all things that, are very appealing to me. But I can also tell you from personal experience, one should not fuck actors. It's a bad idea. And so I think I'm going to have to give it to Nyarlathotep on this one.
Interesting. Okay.
At this final one. And as much as it sucks because also I love actors and also I love theater people. But oh my God, they're generally terrible decisions. And when given somebody who has a goal and a purpose and isn't just some fop in the theater, also the theater is not a stable income. And, you know, advisors, actually a pretty steady gig because, frankly, most of the deities and the chthonic deities probably need advisors. I'm going to go with Nyarlathotep, a deity with purpose.
Haster, the King in Yellow, the Unspeakable, losing out.
That's rough, though. I'm sorry.
To Nyarlathotep, the Crawling Chaos. All right, Nyarlathotep. Moving on, then, as the winner of the Western Conference. That brings us to our final matchup here, really to settle it all, between the Eastern and Western Conferences. The Cosmic Chaos Salty 17 single elimination bracket comes down to this. This is in the March Madness. LD, we have Daggy Dagon.
Uh-huh.
Giant fish man.
Yep.
Of the, basically a 50-foot tall, deep one, scaly, toothed, fanged, clawed, finned. I said scaled already. Slimy, yeah, probably. I don't know, a little
probably.
Bit.
Probably. I'm guessing they're
web
all slimy.
Fingers, big eyes. Got the picture we got that cake up. Got that cake
sure
in
does.
It.
Sure does.
Up against shape-shifting Seneschal Nyarlathotep.
I have to say, I do think that this is not how I predicted this going down. But also, I have to say, I feel like this encapsulates us two as hosts as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, we have, for you, the fish daddy, the scaly.
I'll take that. I'll take daddy energy anytime I can get it. Yeah.
Right. Well, yes. And I know you have a fondness for the wet ones.
Yeah. I love a good wet one.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. And
terrified of the ocean, love a good wet one.
Yep.
I will talk to my therapist about it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's who needs therapy when we have Monster Crush, really.
That's what all shirts are saying.
And we have the shapeshifter, which you know is like where my heart lies are with shapeshifters.
Oh, I know
speaking.
You love options.
I do. I sure do. So this one's, it's tough because I think these are both really excellent competitors. I think, they both are very sexy and appealing in their own unique ways, really.
Mm-hmm. Fantastically to say about Lovecraftian monsters.
Right. Yeah. Well, you did this to us, so.
No, I know what I did. I live myself every day.
Yeah.
All right. So really it comes down to scales. Tentacles, daddy energy.
Tentacles.
Well, Dagon not as many tentacles. Dagon's
that's true.
Pretty much, big fish man. Yeah, Nyarlathotep right. more of tentacles, but you got the shape shifting in there. You got a little more like straightforward daddy energy versus like a little bit of mean girl energy. You know, not necessarily a bad thing. You're like I said, you got your own options.
You do, and this is tough because like. I do love daddy energy strongly, and I feel like Daggy's given that to us. And like, I don't always love mean girl energy, but I don't mean girl energy.
Doesn't have to be a long-term thing.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And I think I gotta go. I think it's gonna be Nyarlathotep for this one. This is
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Wild. I. Hold on, let me look at this picture. I haven't actually re-looked at this picture of Dagon again. Yeah, I mean, it's good. And I do love a scaly fishman. We know how much I love Shape of Water as well, but I think it's got to be Nyarlathotep.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's Nyarlathotep.
Incredible upset here in the March of Madness. Salty 17 single elimination brackets come down to this. Nyarlathotep's going to go home with the trophy. This has been incredible. First year in the March of Madness. I cannot wait for next year where we get through even more Lovecraftian horrors.
I feel like we should publish our bracket and make other people fill it out and see what the results
absolutely.
Are.
I'm definitely going to. Mine's very lovely and handwritten. Mm-hmm. I made a little graphic when they were clashing. You know, LD, I think for all of your struggle and your hard work today, I think when you get back to the hotel room tonight, you might find both Daggy Dagon and Nyarlathotep there for you. That's all I'll say for this. It's okay to have two winners here in the March of Madness. It's the only thing that doesn't make sense. And it's in the March of Madness. Theme song! Madness! Okay, I just like saying theme song and then knowing that I'm going to enter it later and just hear it in my head. That's In the March of Madness. That is the episode. Thank you, LD, for enduring this, for enjoying this, for putting your blood, sweat, tears, you know, clear eyes, can't lose, whatever. That's football. Full eyes, full hearts, full stomachs. Probably gonna throw up.
Yep, probably. Yep. Most likely. That's also, I believe, one of the symptoms. Well, thank you, Derek. And while we're doing thank yous, a few thank yous to, first of all, of course, Nick Lambert, our composer, musician of our fabulous theme song for Monster Crush. You can find Nick at LambertTropolis on Instagram. Also, a big thank you to the Sword and Key Network. You can find all of their links on beacons.ai/Sword and Key. Sword and Key produces podcasts and TTRPG content. Look for Sword and Key with underscores between the words on their social media. It's most of them. Thank you, listeners, for coming and checking us out and listening to us. If you like this podcast, if you like this episode, please like, subscribe, rate, and review. We'll maybe, who knows, read a review or two. You can find us specifically on Instagram, Twitter, and Blue Sky at Monster Crush Pod. And you can find all of our links on our Linktree, which is Linktree/Monster Crush. And from there, you can tweet at us, send us an Instagram DM, join the Monster Crush chat over on the Discord, or even email us. So you can tell us your Monster Crush, what monsters you'd like to hear about in future episodes, and share your own spooky experiences with us. We might even share those on a future episode. Which might be why we haven't seen too many of them, because some people are afraid to share their spooky experiences. But I promise there's no judgment here. We put this podcast together.
No judgment. We only do it with consent. Yes. Very much appreciated if it is ever something you want to share.
It's true. And also, an aside, big thank you to Friday Afternoon Tea. Yours truly here is an affiliate for Friday Afternoon Tea, and they are a local Pacific Northwest woman-owned tea company that makes nerdy fandom teas, witchy blends, all sorts of wonderful, amazing things. And the only place that you can find smut tea, which is the one that I created, you can get 10% off your order from Friday Afternoon Tea using code THELADYDAME. So everybody, stay salty. We said salty, yeah. 17, so that's what we're doing.
Stay salty. I think that is a very Nyarlathotep thing to go out on, too. Yeah. I feel like Nyarlathotep, while not being oceanic necessarily, definitely has like a salty quality to them. Yeah, there's a certain level of just like, oh, fine. Like, exactly. Biggest Starian energy, I'm realizing, too.
I think that's definitely the vibe that we're getting. And for somebody
some brat energy.
Yeah. I don't know that it'll work long term, really. But, you know, they made a good showing, so.
I'm sure they did and will. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next time for even more Monster Crush. Take care of yourselves.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Rubbing alcohol, you can get anything off. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me try that again without yawning.
Yeah.
Enough rubbing alcohol, you can get anything off.
That was a good clean take.
Thank you.